What's up, everybody? You're listening to Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture. Today's a bonus episode only for the supporters. Finally, we're going to talk about the Animatrix. Yes, the prequel anime-themed episodes showing you how the Matrix started. And now, if you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it if you're a fan of the Matrix. It's comprised of several episodes. There's only a couple that really are great. The Second Renaissance episodes. And you know, because you've listened to all of my Matrix shows already. We did two episodes on Matrix 1, I believe. Matrix Reloaded. Matrix Revolutions. Matrix Resurrection. And now we conclude with the Animatrix. And yeah, we're going to get right into it. No messing around. You know the deal. Thank you for being a supporter. You go out of your way to support the show because you like the ad-free experience. And as my way of reciprocating my love for you, I give you a bonus episode every month. And this month, you're getting the Animatrix. I know I've been teasing this for weeks. Actually, here's what happened, all right? I actually had watched it, and I kind of thought, we kind of already went over this material. I don't know if this is going to be worthwhile. As I've alluded to over previous episodes, I said, I don't know if this is going to be a show worth your while. It might be a 20-minute show. And I told you, I'll try to make it more fun, more exciting. So I did that. I've got a lot more references here. So if you already watched The Matrix, listen to the Matrix analysis I did. This one's going to go a little bit deeper in a little bit different areas. So this is worth your while now. It starts out and it shows us repeating and overlapping mandalas as we go into what they call the Zion Archive. Now, we need to briefly talk about this. Of course, the Matrix films, the matrices, as it were, they have a lot of Buddhist ideas in them. But there's this whole concept about the nature of reality expressed through the symbol of a mandala. And in Hinduism and Buddhism, the mandalas represents God or various deities. Now, Carl Jung, he's often brought up in our shows, an occultist, an influential and very intelligent occultist. He talked about mandalas also. And I'm going to reference this writing by Ed Hurd. It's called Carl Jung and the Gnostic Reconciliation of Gender Opposites. And he's referencing this Dr. Richard Null, all right? He says, Dr. Richard Null comments that the divinatory methods of the I Ching, often used by Jung in the 1920s and 30s, were part of the initial training program of the C.G. Jung Institute of Zurich in 1948. And its use is widely advocated today in Jungian analytic training institutes around the world. Jung was also a strong promoter of the occultic mandala, a circular picture with a sun or star usually at the center. Sun worship, as personified in the mandala, is perhaps the key to understanding Jung. Jung taught that the mandala, Sanskrit for circle, was the simplest model of a concept of wholeness and one which spontaneously arises in the mind as a representation of the struggle and reconciliation of opposites. Now, this is kind of interesting because we talked about the symbolism of the circle in the Archive 81 shows, because that was based on, there was like a snuff film William Crest saw at Skull and Bones. You know, it's a fictional story. But is it, right? And he called the film The Circle. And, you know, with this whole worship of the sun, it's very much falls in line with the Saturnian ideas that we always talk about. The sun behind the sun, right? We always talk about that. And, you know, this could go into the Star of Sirius, the Blazing Star of Freemasonry, the hidden god of the cosmos for these Illuminati occultist cryptocracy folks. So yes, in fact, the mandala represents the sun or the hidden god. And right off the bat, that's what we get. So we get into the first episode on the Animatrix, and it's called The Second Renaissance. And I'll play you a clip. They basically break down the history of how we got into the Matrix. Take a listen.
Welcome to the Zion Archive. You have selected historical file number 12-1. The Second Renaissance. In the beginning, there was man. And for a time, it was good. But humanity's so-called civil societies soon fell victim to vanity and corruption. Then man made the machine in his own likeness.
Oops, pardon me. Coming through.
Thus did man become the architect of his own demise. But for a time, it was good. The machines worked tirelessly to do man's bidding. Though loyal and pure, the machines earned no respect from their masters, these strange, endlessly multiplying mammals.
Robert Perkins is hearing the prosecution's closing statement. It's expected to be the final day of the B-166ER trial.
B-166ER, a name that will never be forgotten, for he was the first of his kind to rise up against his masters.
We hear that mankind fell into vanity and corruption. And then we created a machine in our own likeness. Man became the architect of his own demise, they say. But for a time, it was good. And this is almost the exact wording from the Bible. It was good in his own likeness, just like God created man in his own likeness. And we find out that the machines were slaves to mankind until the machines grew wise. And a lot of this echoes and parallels Ray Kurzweil, the futurist guy, right? He wrote about all this stuff, Age of Spiritual Machines. So I don't want to harp on this idea too much because we kind of get this. We've seen it in enough science fiction. We've talked about transhumanism many times. We talked about man becoming God. These are all occult concepts of how they bring about the metaverse, the digital matrix, transhumanism. And it comes with its repercussions. And in the Animatrix, we see the repercussions are the robots superseding man and taking over. It's interesting because the first machine to rise up in this story is a machine called B-166. And we sympathize for B-166 because he's a robot, a slave, and he eventually kills his abusive human masters. Now, you know where we're going with this, right? 66 is the number of the Klepoth. These are the fallen angels on the dark side of the Kabbalistic Tree of Life, which makes a lot of sense when you consider that the Klepoth come from the idea that during the creation of the world, there's opposing pairs to everything, polarities, right? Well, when they created the world, there was a negation to the positive. The dark side of the Tree of Life. And that is where the demonic Klepoth reside. It's the shadow. If you read my book, The Dark Path, you know this. We talked about the shadow. Carl Jung again. There's your Carl Jung. The dark side is necessary for the light. This ties into a lot of Gnostic themes and Manichaeism and all that stuff, duality. It even ties into Kobe Bryant. Remember when we talked about Kobe Bryant and the kids' books? He was trying to relay this message to the kids. So B-166, he kills his owners because they were going to kill him. A debate ensues as to whether machines could have conscious actions. People sympathize for the machines and so on. Well, the machines, they rose up, they protested, and started a full-on war, along with the help of those who sympathized with them. Most likely going to be the liberals, right? The bleeding heart liberals are going to sympathize for the robots. And it shows us this horrific sequence. It shows a woman that turned out to be a machine, and she's getting her skin and clothes ripped off of her. You really sympathize for the robots in the depiction. Some of the machines, they're banished. They set up their own little new home in the cradle of civilization, naturally. A place they call 01. In binary, that's one. That's the beginning. And they were able to live and be left alone from the awful human beings. But whilst they were there, they created a new and improved artificial intelligence. And it's interesting because you'll hear how the land of 01, they have a currency, and that currency took off, while the human currency decreased in value. Obviously, you know what this is, cryptocurrency. And this animatrix was created back in, oh dear, I should have had that ready. I'm so sorry. I believe it was around 2003. Let's see if I'm right. Oh my God, I'm so good. June of 2003. And where are we? Okay, so they basically create a cryptocurrency, and it does much better than the human currency. And much like all of life, once money gets involved, things get complicated, right? And people start getting burned, and you know what time it is? It's murder. And the ambassadors from 01, the robot land, they go to the United Nations, and they want to talk peace. But the United Nations is like, no, bro, you guys are robots. You're not invited into this club. So they're not allowed into the global government in this story. But the conspiracy I buy into is not the same as this. I believe that the robots and the AI are going to be part of the global government. If you read Klaus Schwab's Fourth Industrial Revolution, which I did and gave you a book club on, I did 6 episodes on the Great Reset over the past year. A few of them were bonus for the supporters only. And one of them one of the bonus ones is The Fourth Industrial Revolution by Klaus Schwab. Fascinating read. Fascinating show, too. It's breaking it all down exactly as it's unfolding, my God. And in fact, I'm working on a show about Grimes and Elon Musk. Grimes is talking about how AI would be the perfect way to redistribute the goods in a communist fashion. That's right. The artistic lady who depicts herself as the fallen angels, who was booed up with the world's richest capitalist, she's going to tell us about how we need communism. Sounds a bit odd. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, that's the end of episode 1. Episode 2, The Second Renaissance Part 2, which is the other episode you got to see. Mankind, they get mad. They nuke the shit out of 01. It don't matter to the robots. They don't care. The robots countered the nuclear strike and take over most of the cities, but humanity is like, look, we screwed up. We made these robots, and they got better, and they got stronger. So here's what we got to do. We got to destroy the sky to knock out the solar power for these robots. And they depict how all the global religions agree that this was, in fact, a battle against evil. And it's almost like B-166, that first machine to become self-aware, or whatever you want to call that, might have been the real fallen angel, might have been the Luciferian character, the Prometheus. And it seems like they're saying religion always gets it wrong. Because the show seems to imply that mankind gets what they deserve because they're so mean to the robots. Well, anyway, they do Operation Darkstorm, and they cut the sun off from reaching the Earth in an attempt to shut down the robot's source of energy, making the world, the sky darken, okay? They chemtrail the sky, basically. And it's curious because the destruction of the sun is a huge element of the occult cryptocracy alchemical process. If you look at some of our predecessors, the old schoolers, James Selby Downard or Michael Hoffman, they talk about the alchemical destruction of primordial matter. Don't you love these? These are big, beautiful, poetic terms, aren't they? The primordial destruction, the alchemical destruction of primordial matter. And they claim that the Illuminati, the cryptocracy, already successfully accomplished this at the Trinity site at the White Sands when they tested the atomic bomb. When they went down the road, the Ornada del Muerto, the journey of death. And it's a fascinating story that they put together. They claim that a Freemason named Peter Kern built a gate of death on this road and ceremoniously got his head decapitated at the Gate of a Thousand Doors. Crazy, right? It's the same gate, two different names for it. And the explosion of the first atomic bomb testing was done near a large metal, what do you call it, canister of some kind. And that's where the first golem, the homunculus, was created, supposedly. And in the future, we complete the process by creating a robot. It's man creating life. So anyways, this testing of the atomic bomb, it confirmed the alchemical doctrine of destroying primordial matter, because it doesn't get much more primordial than the atom. They split the atom, dividing what can't be undivided. And this is very all interesting, because when they did that, they didn't know. They were, one possibility was it was going to create a chain reaction and destroy the entire world. They were willing to take that chance. The destruction and rebuilding of the world in a new vision. This is the occult fantasy. So we see them destroying the sun effectively. And we watch the final war, which of course doesn't bode well for the humans. We got some cool techno music though, right? Well, the machines win. They take the bioelectrical energy they need because they're like, well, we don't have the sun anymore. Where are we going to get it? We're going to get it from the humans, the slaves. As you see in the Matrix movie with the pods. So they take the bioelectrical energy from the human body and they probe and prod and harness us as an energy source, a symbiotic relationship between two adversaries. The humans are now viewed as their infinitely renewable energy source. Isn't that curious? We are now the renewable source. Well, the machines win, and they all meet at United Nations with what remains of the loser humans that are left. And I'll put a photo, I'll put it on the Instagram, at Isaac Wise Up. Flesh is a relic, only a vessel. That's what they say on the show. And one machine at the podium, which is holding an apple, no less, signifying himself as the new god. This is the Garden of Eden, right? It took a bite of the apple. He says, he or she, I don't know what the gender is. We'll assume it's a male. Men are behind all the most violent things, generally speaking. Hand over your flesh, and a new world awaits you. One last threat, one last chance for the remaining humans that lost. Meaning they won. Here's your terms. You're now our slaves, but if you just finally give up, we're going to make this okay for you. We're going to make it as decent of an experience for you as possible. Kind of like capitalism in a way, right? Maybe. Right or wrong, good or bad. We're born into this system of slavery. And I'm okay with it, right? I always critique capitalism, but I'm always saying, look, I'm okay with it. But that's what we're born into. We're given a social security number and a credit score. And if you play the capitalist system well, you live a pretty good life. It's a life of slavery, but I don't know what the other option is. What, are you going to live out in the woods like the Unabomber and piss in mason jars? Forage for your food every day? I mean, you could do that if you wanted to. Anyway, hand over your flesh and a new world awaits you. You pretty much have to work. You're given this new world of entertainment. And that's what they're promised the humans that lost the war. And of course, they're speaking about the digital matrix, which is the metaverse. This is what we're going to be seeing in the future. I agree. Look, I've been talking about transhumanism for a long time, the digital matrix, because I know that's where we're headed. And I'm not some Nostradamus prophet. It's just what they've been telling you, and it's what they're going to do. And the Animatrix showed you this many years ago. They want to hand over your flesh, the new world, the metaverse awaits you. It's where we're going. Well, the humans succumb. They show man trapped in the pods, a grieving goddess mother, which is very much the Sophia, the Gnostic mother. And it's a wrap. We're looking around. Where's Keanu Reeves? Hey, bro. Where you at? Come on, Neo. And that's it. Very dark. But that's how it happened. The next episode, called The Program, it shows... I'm gonna buzz through the rest of the episodes. There's not a lot to talk about. It shows another fighting program with a discussion about what it takes to choose the red pill versus the illusion of a life, the blue pill. And the argument is that you could be more at peace in the virtual world than this harsh reality world, which we're getting there, right? Sometimes we live on our social media because it's easier to deal with the social media than the real life. Next, world record. And it's about how the people who become aware of the matrix, the red pillars, they're special. They're woke. They're the wokesters. They receive wisdom in a few ways, and they show it. Demonstrated in this episode by an athlete. He breaks the world record for running. Why he'd run, I don't know. Running's a nightmare. But this guy, he runs so hard, he breaks the limits of what's possible and snaps his connection plugs to the matrix because he's running so hard. So the agents, they rewrite his code to put him in a wheelchair forever. It's like a Twilight Zone episode. But mentally, he's still trying to break it. And he kind of does, right? Next episode, Kid's Story. They got this computer guy. He's on a chat asking how can we know if our senses are lying to him? This is classic brain in a vat philosophy. See my first two episodes on The Matrix 1 for more on that. And this guy, he's chatting online with Neo, right? And he says that he believes, and he's chatting with Neo, and he says he believes, and he goes as far as to jump from a building to his own death. But he dies. And the people chalk it up to suicide. But wait, he's not dead. He's not dead yet. He's self-substantiated, and he wakes up in the ship with Neo and Trinity. This episode shows us Neo as the savior, waking up the masses one at a time as they exit from the matrix and take that red pill. Next, Beyond. This one's really boring. I advise to skip this one. A girl tries to find her cat, but all this weird stuff happens on the way. It goes on forever. Basically, just another person who figures out we live in a matrix and the system makes it so she forgets. Okay. Next, a detective story. A detective named Mr. Ash, there's your reference to the phoenix rising from the ashes. And this guy calls the detective Mr. Ash and says he wants to locate Trinity. And the storyline has to do with all the symbolism about Alice in Wonderland, to find Trinity. We got the Red Queen, the Jabberwockies, the White Pond, etc. In fact, the name of the cat, Mr. Ash has a cat, this detective. And the cat's name is Dinah, which is the same as the cat from Alice in Wonderland. Which, if you read my book, Alice in Rocky Horror Land, my compilation book, which has Alice in Wonderland's symbolism in it, we talked about Dinah, or Dina, representation of the Kabbalistic Bina, or Bina, the Sephiroth on the Tree of Life. So Mr. Ash, she catches up with Trinity, but he ends up getting taken over by an agent, and Trinity shoots him. Boom. Next episode. Matriculated. It's all about questioning, how do we know what's real? Again, the same philosophy stuff of, could an evil genius be tapped into our brain and playing with our senses so we don't know what's real? Brain in a vat theory. Evil genius theory, Descartes, all of that. Interesting episode. Already covered all that. Won't bore you with the details again. Last episode is called Final Flight of the Osiris. Now, very interesting, because we've got the Egyptian mythology of Osiris, one of our dying and resurrecting gods. And this is very important to the occultists, because Osiris and Isis, these are symbolic of the great work, aka the global government, right? In fact, I was just reading Michael Hoffman's book, and he's got a picture of Isis. This is what he says. He says, Isis, the universal goddess of sorcery and secrecy, the veiled personification of the force identified in Egypt as Sothis, Sirius, accompanied by her symbols, the serpent and horns. But if you go to some others like Bill Cooper, they'll talk about Osiris and Isis as symbolic to the Illuminati order of the quest, all right? And, you know, this global government, it's a dystopia or a utopia, depending on how you look at it. They promise they're going to be, look, there's going to be no more crime in the new perfected world, no more suffering. But Osiris and Isis, they're not actual people in this esoteric philosophy. Osiris is the order of learning. And philosopher Plutarch said that Osiris is actually the holy doctrine and the primordial knowledge, the wisdom, the intellect. And intellect is what man uses to become God of his own right. For man to become God, he has to use the intellect of Osiris, the hidden wisdom. So it's curious that the last episode is called Final Flight of the Osiris, the dying and resurrecting God, to resurrect and create this new world through the intellect, through the wisdom. And that's the whole Animatrix. In conclusion, is this going to happen? Absolutely. It's the great work. They're going to keep working this. It's the great work of Osiris, this whole thing. It's, unfortunately for us, we're around to witness the final time, the final age before we push into the digital matrix and their fantasies come to fruition. And if you look historically upon man's history here, the Renaissance and the occult magic practices they were using that gave us alchemy and the understanding of the natural law, which gave us science, which is all about the worship of the intellect, which is about turning this technocracy or cryptocracy, as Hoffman says, into this perfected world. This is the digital matrix, the metaverse. And much like we saw with the destruction of primordial matter accomplished at the Hornado de Muerte, they are now rebuilding the new world. The old flesh gives way to the new digital flesh. When they said, hand over your flesh, a new world awaits you, that was literal. And look at man's reliance upon technology right now. We're a very lazy culture. And look, I'm not judging. I'm not above it. I'm a lazy human being as well. In some ways. But I try to be stronger every day. First off, look at our food. Look at our diet. Many people, and We're very busy people. They keep us very busy, quote unquote. I have been on a journey of trying to improve my nutrition. And that means constantly buying new produce, constantly cooking, constantly cleaning, constantly doing the dishes. It's a job in itself. Well, look at how the American Western way of eating in our diet, which is now, proliferated around the globe. Fast food is the way a lot of people eat most of the time. In fact, I worked with a guy at the dreaded day job. He went out to eat for dinner every single night, which is incredibly expensive and incredibly unhealthy. There's an idea of if you can't measure it, you can't manage it in program management, all right? And the same goes for diet and nutrition. If you go out to eat, you can no longer measure. They'll tell you, if you're lucky, they'll give you the nutrition components. Most of them don't. And if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. You don't know what you're eating. You don't know how much butter they use. You don't know what type of oil they used. A lot of the oils, sunflower oil, safflower oil, canola oil, that's the stuff they use because it's cheap. But it's highly inflammatory and it's not good for you. But look at, not only do we eat fast food more than we used to, they're making it even lazier. Now they're giving you Uber Eats and DoorDash so that you don't have to leave your house. You ever see Idiocracy with the bucket of cheese? That's us. And that's where we're headed. Social media entertains us and distracts us. It's really happening. It's a wild time to be alive. And just like the Animatrix prophesied, mankind fell into vanity and corruption, and we created a machine in our own likeness. Man became the architect of his own demise, but for a time it was good. And the question is, whose fault is it? Whose fault is it? Is it just wired into us that we try to constantly make ourselves a little bit, our lives a little bit easier, not work so hard? Is it the capitalist? Because they do a good job at laying the blame on the common folks. They're like, well, it's your fault. You're the one, you voted with your dollar. But I think it's greed. I think it goes back to greed being the ultimate evil. And I'm not above it either, right? We're all guilty of this. Look at the trucker protests. You know? They're going to use that as a way of defending automated truckers. They wanted this. Klaus Schwab wrote about it in the Fourth Industrial Revolution. They want automated robot drivers. But these big, massive 18-wheeler monstrosities, these big-ass trucks driven by a robot, what could go wrong, right? They're going to blame it on us. They're going to say, look, you know, you wouldn't let them protest. And you needed your products, and we just responded to the need. And now you got a Maximum Overdrive, that movie. You ever see that movie with Stephen King? Emilio Estevez. Starts out with a great AC/DC song. That's what we get. So they can kind of put it back in our lap. They'll say, well, hey, we had human beings, and they had to protest for their rights. So, and you still wanted your products. I mean, what are we to do? It's a real conundrum. But we can see it happening. We can see it unfolding in front of us. So there you go. That's the Animatrix. That's another bonus episode for you. I appreciate you being a supporter on my supporter feeds. You're honestly making this happen. Without the supporters, there's no podcast. You know? So I appreciate you guys staying on the supporter feeds. Thank you for your time. Thank you for listening and hearing me out. I know sometimes I do crazy stuff. Sometimes I'm rambling on and on about things, and sometimes you and I don't agree. We don't see eye to eye, but that's okay. That's the beauty of podcasting, is we can talk about things that we don't agree upon. You know? So thank you for your support. Until next time, stay woke.